the story for energy storage is still very, very strong. You know, we are long-term investors and want our investors to be long-term. We're looking at the long-term picture, which is very much a growth market.
Let's talk about the biggest battery in Europe and what's different about doing things at scale.
To go from 7.5 meg to nearly 100 meg is a big jump.
And the revenue environment in Great Britain for batteries has been very tricky. And I'm interested to get your thoughts.
So whilst it's been very painful to see the share price decline, you just have to play the cards you're dealt and, you know, play to our strengths and continue to accelerate the development piece, which we've done very well on, and try and, you know, manage the assets as best we can to position them for growth.
Hello and welcome back to a very special episode of Transmission. This is our 100th episode and we are coming full circle with an interview with Peter Kavanagh, CEO and founder of Harmony Energy. Long-time listeners may remember that episode 1 featured Paul Mason, Chief Investment Officer at Harmony, where Paul talked through taking the company to IPO. In this episode, Peter discusses the rest of the Harmony story, from founding to future. To celebrate this milestone, we are also running a giveaway where you can bag yourself a limited edition 100th episode Transmission t-shirt. For your chance to enter, go to the show notes and enter via the link. And with that, let's jump in.
Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Quentin. Great to be here.
This is a very special one because we are recording this. This is episode 100 and we've gone full circle. I can't believe in the last 2.5 years we've done so many of these. And our first ever episode was with Paul, your colleague, Paul Mason from Harmony Energy, who talked to us about the journey to take Harmony Energy public. And now 100 episodes on, a lot has changed. It feels like everything's changed, the market and the technology, and your company's grown so fast. We've got a lot to talk about. But 100 episodes in, it's a real privilege to have you on, Peter. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and many congrats on the 100th episode. It's an honor to be on the slot.
Yeah, we didn't pre-warn you about this, so insert some fanfare here. So I'm sure most of our listeners know who you are, but let's get stuck into Harmony Energy and your background, Peter. How did you come up with the idea to start Harmony Energy?
So the original Harmony Energy, I founded in 2010, and it was really off the back of, I'd been in finance and we'd been involved in funding large-scale wind farms. And so really the initial focus was funding UK onshore wind, and we built, owned and operated 15 sites in the UK. And then the storage side really came about in 2016 when we co-founded a separate business branded Harmony Energy with my colleague, our operations director, Alex Thornton. And me and Alex had worked together on turbines over the course of the previous 5 years. He had done the sort of the balance of plant for our wind farms. So there's a good relationship there. And we'd always talked about the next big thing. And at the time that was storage. And, you know, in hindsight, we were a little early into the space. That obviously led on to ultimately to where we are today. And yeah, the rest is history.
And didn't you guys do an EFR bid back in the day? Is that how you got started with storage?
We didn't, no. We had sort of 600 megawatts of sites early on that were shovel ready quite quickly, but we weren't quick enough for EFR. And we kind of saw it at the time as, you know, it turned out to be a very low clearing price and we were more focused on straight FFR. And, you know, we were doing our fundraising rounds in London through BDO on the typical financial model at that time was pricing in FFR, if I remember rightly, at sort of £18 for the first 2 years and dropping very aggressively down to 12.
EFR was, so the prices of EFR were between, I think it was £7 EDF came in at, and the highest one, the highest awarded contract was like 12 for EFR, which was like half a second response. And then FFR was still getting 18 to 20 quid.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy early days. Yeah, I mean, it was painful in the early days as well, as you probably remember. I think, you know, the time when you were at Kiwi Power, those were the sort of numbers been used at the time because no one, I mean, obviously it was new technology, new markets. No one really knew how things were going to pan out. You had to be sort of relatively conservative in what you were forecasting. And I think at the time, you know, I'd come from a wind space where we were getting 20-year subsidies, inflation linked, which were very attractive contracted revenue streams, to then moving into a space where you're getting, you know, effectively merchant risk on an asset it's a very in-depth, different investor mindset that we had to do a lot of, you know, education to investors. And, you know, there's so many conversations where we'd have sort of three or four round of meetings and then they would go, but we're not sure about merchant risk, even though you've been very clear about, you know, this is merchant risk from the outset. So yeah, there was a lot of expended energy on educating investors at a very early stage back in 2016.
And Harmony Energy has been, it's got a lot of attention for a range of reasons. So you're one of the big listed vehicles in the UK that owns assets. You famously built a lot of Tesla assets, which have got, the whole Tesla name has got a bit of magic dust around it, which got people excited. So Harmony Energy got, I saw lots of Twitter threads from Tesla, you know, fan folks that were talking about Harmony Energy, which was awesome. And then of course, while the rest of the market was building or procuring 1.5 hour systems, you guys went hard at 2 hour systems early doors. And there's a few other things to do with you guys as well. Lots of first, biggest battery in X, lots of really innovative stuff. So before we do the overview of Harmony Energy, could you just explain the fund structure for people who don't know? There's an income trust and then there's a company and manager. And before we talk about the megawatts, could you just explain how the company fits together?
Yeah, of course. It's quite a complex structure. So there's Harmony Energy Limited, which is a private co. Then we have the listed vehicle, Harmony Energy Income Trust, listed on the London Stock Exchange. And sat in between, we have Harmony Energy Advisors Limited, which is myself and three colleagues. And that company is wholly owned by Harmony Energy Limited. And we then advise the five non-executive directors of the listed vehicle on how to run the listed vehicle in terms of sites they acquire from Harmony Energy Limited, with which it has exclusive rights on the first gigawatt of sites coming through development. Harmony Energy Limited is focused on, and we will come on to it later, no doubt, but other markets outside the UK, whereas the listed vehicle at the present time is purely focused on the UK battery market.
So Harmony Energy Limited feeds the income trust with sites and assets to build, is that right?
That's right. Yeah, so we've, at the moment, we've fed it over sort of half a gigawatt. So in megawatt hour terms, that's over, sorry, a gigawatt hour in terms of assets that are in there. That's, you know, roughly 277 that are operational and 117 that are in construction. And then we sold 199 megawatts that went into the fund, then was sold separately to Pulse Clean Energy because we couldn't raise sufficient funds to build it.
And so let's talk about the fund for a second. So Harmony Energy Income Trust, how long has the fund been going? Well, actually, we already know this. It was just before Modo Energy podcast number one, you guys floated on the stock exchange in London. What was that like?
It was an amazing experience. Obviously new to us all, and all happened relatively quickly in the end. You know, I think what we had was a great pipeline, a great team. And yeah, essentially we floated in November 2021. So the timing was good because obviously investment environment and interest rates in particular at the time were low. So it was a very different environment to what it is today. But it was a relatively smooth process. You know, you do what you call the early look investor rounds, which we did in June, July of 2021. Those went really well. The investors we spoke to, all institutional investors, were very enthusiastic about what we were doing and why we were different. You know, it was new, clean Tesla technology we were using, 2 hour duration with long-term warranties. And, you know, we had a very low management charging structure as well, very clean charging structure, and investors like that story. So it was well received, and you know, we raised just shy of 200 million sterling to get it kickstarted. So, you know, we were really pleased with that. Been the first sort of major funding round we'd done. And the idea was always to go back to market to raise more, to continue to build out the wonderful pipeline that we have.
And we're going to talk about the current state of the market, because a lot's changed since then. And all of the income, all of the public listed funds are trading at a discount to NAV at the moment. And the revenue environment in Great Britain for batteries has been very tricky. We talked a little bit with Alex from Gore Street a few weeks ago about this, and I'm interested to get your thoughts later on in the podcast. But before we get there, the current state of Harmony Energy Income Trust, what does the portfolio look like right now? You touched on it a minute ago, but how many megawatts have you got in the ground? How many megawatts are you building? And what does Harmony Energy look like beyond the UK?
So in the Income Trust alone, I'll just deal with that first. We have 277 megawatts, and all these are 2-hour systems. So I'll just give you the megawatt nameplate that's operational today. We have another 117 megawatts, which is in the very late stages of construction. So all batteries are on site, virtually done. And we announced that those three sites will be coming online shortly. So that's inside the Income Trust. Outside of the Income Trust, we have a further just shy of 250 megawatts, half a gigawatt hour, which is split across essentially 5 sites. And those are joint ventures that we agreed before we IPO'd with FRV and Tag Energy. Outside of that, we have a construction financing facility we're looking to complete with inside the next month that will enable us to build our first French asset and 3 assets in the UK and 1 in Poland. So that part is about 510 megawatts that will go into construction, I'd hope, within the next 6 to 12 months. And the reason there's a lag on that is that they all have different energization dates, so you need to stagger it in accordance to those energization dates. Outside of that, we have, and it sounds like a scarily big number, but about 13 gigawatts in our global pipeline, of which about 12 gigawatts is purely battery energy storage split across the UK, France, Poland, Germany. We've recently gone into Italy, but we don't have any sites in Italy yet. And then we have about a gigawatt of sites in New Zealand, but New Zealand is all solar. So we're building our first solar farm in New Zealand in Q3. And that's very exciting. It's going to be New Zealand's biggest solar farm, but New Zealand is at the moment predominantly a solar market. So we've been purely focused on solar there for the last 3 years.
So if you've got a capital structure for raising money and deploying money into assets, you then have to go and find those assets, so go and find developed sites. And one of the unusual things, or unique things, if you like, about Harmony Energy is you decided to go really far down that road. So putting on your Wellington boots and going into farmers' fields and trying to find sites even before grid connections or planning. And so developing sites is in Harmony Energy's DNA. And could you just talk a little bit about that?
That's right. And we've always done that from the very outset. You know, when I started out Harmony, it was just me, and I was going around the countryside knocking on farmers' doors and saying, hey, do you fancy having a wind turbine here? And you know, you build up a reputation for delivering. And I think that's why we've been able to expand rapidly into Europe, because people have seen what we've done so quickly in the UK. And they want to be with someone that will take it through from the origination and build it out and operate. And that's a really key thing that, you know, we're keen on rolling out across the piece. And I'm not saying we'll go to every nation within Europe. We're very selective about where we go, and we go with trusted parties who are experienced developers. But yeah, we've got, you know, an excellent team throughout the development team, but also on the delivery side as well. There's obviously a lot of work goes into delivering these projects, and trying to get the projects through on time and in budget is not an easy task, particularly given the last, you know, 4 years we've had when we've been building and operating. But yeah, I mean, you know, when you control the development process from the origination, you know what you're getting with the site, warts and all. And, you know, we've, like I say, we've got a really slick process. And I think that sort of, you know, you can see that through the volume we've accumulated. When I'm talking about 13 gigawatts, those are sites where they've got, you know, extremely high probability of coming through to construction, not within the next year, but, you know, over the course of the next 4-5 years, there's a very strong probability of those coming through, because, you know, what we've been very good at historically is identifying sites with grid. And if you're going into, say, France or Germany now, or Poland, you're going to see that the grid is very heavily constrained. So most people recognize that within the UK, but they probably don't expect to see the same level of constraints, for example, in France, where, you know, batteries are nowhere near the scale they are in the UK. It's a relatively new market. But these markets have all got relatively hot from what people have seen in the UK. People are going into Europe trying to secure grid connections. And, you know, whether some of those sites from others will actually get developed or not is a question that remains to be seen. Because you do, you know, as you do in the UK, you see highly speculative projects that are, you know, miles away from the grid connection point. And it's slightly frustrating because you think, well, we know that won't get developed because it can't be cost competitive, but it's kind of blocking up the grid queue.
Let's talk about the biggest battery in Europe. You guys are building or have built the biggest battery in Europe. Can you just talk about that for a second? And what's different about doing things at scale to smaller sites? And there will be a lot of benefits too. Can you talk about the benefits for your cost structure and delivery timelines and all that?
Yeah, no, sure. So we've got the biggest battery in Europe is actually joint between Bumpers Farm, which is held in a listed vehicle, Harmony Energy Income Trust, and also Claytie Farm, which is held privately in a joint venture we have with FRV. So they're both the same size. They're 99 meg, 198 megawatt hours, both using Tesla Megapack system. And yeah, you know, I think dealing with each one in turn, they were roughly originated around the same time, so 2016, 2017, where we found the land and started the Heerlijk planning work. So that, you know, the planning phase is obviously different challenges in it. I think the main one we had on Bumpers, by example, was the access route and getting the local community on side to enable the access route, which took longer than expected. In terms of the procurement, where you're going, you know, much larger sites than where we started off. So our first site, Hulls Bay, which is the first two-hour system in Europe in a joint venture with FRV.
Just quick shout to Hulls Bay. That was pretty special when it came online.
It was a very proud moment for us. You know, first two-hour system in Europe, first to use Tesla Autobidder system. And yeah, so to go from 7.5 meg to nearly 100 meg is a big jump. But your technical challenges are, you know, similar in terms of what you need to deliver. I think, you know, our project team, by the time we delivered Bumpers, had a wealth of experience of dealing with grid issues, of dealing with Tesla, who've been great throughout the process. So it was a relatively smooth process, but ensuring you had project managers allocated to projects and you were regularly liaising with grid and Tesla in terms of the contracting is absolutely crucial. You know, we saw the value of that across all our sites. I think where you can lose time is where you have delays with the grid, which sometimes can't be helped, but managing those and building those personal relationships is absolutely key to successful execution on the project. And yeah, I mean, in terms of the economics, obviously scale massively helps as well. When you're procuring, you know, large amounts of kit, it's much better than trying to procure, you know, a 7 or 10 megawatt kit, which is where we started out. And you're able to drive the economics that way, which I think is really important, not only for your initial CapEx, but also for your operational, you know, your OpEx cost going forward as well.
I'm going to touch on the GB market now for a second. It's been a really rough 6 months to a year, if you like, for income trusts. All the public listed funds are down. Battery revenues are down by 60-70%. And this creates real problems for those funds, of which you run one of them. Can you talk about what's happened in the GB market? And did you expect it to happen, to play out this way? And how has it changed how you guys do business?
So no, I mean, we didn't expect it to play out this way. I think, you know, we had a very strong year in 2022 on our private assets. And that set a very high, sort of almost unrealistic expectation of where revenues might be. And then obviously, you know, 2023 played out to be a pretty weak year. And this year to date, okay, it's been, you know, higher revenues this month and in April, but overall it's not played out to be as high as we or anyone else had hoped. I think what I come back to is that the overall picture that we stressed at IPO is very much still intact. Okay, the long-term revenue picture is still very much intact from where it was in November 2021. And we as a listed fund, along with other listed funds, have to use market forecasts to be independent. So if those market forecasts vary, which for example, they have done recently and they've come down, we have to insert those into our model. And then we have to say to the stock market, we've updated our forecast and the net asset value, so the future cash flows, are lower than we were expecting. And then we update the market and say, that is now what our revised net asset value is. So i.e. what the value of the assets would be on the open market. I do feel it's frustrating because the market, the revenues have been volatile. And, you know, it's been well documented as to the reasons for that, lower gas price volatility, but also the balancing mechanism not being used as efficiently as we'd hoped. And, you know, we have always built our business case off the back of ancillary revenues almost going to zero very early on, which has, you know, has happened. That market's become very saturated. Whilst they haven't gone to zero, they've become very low and unprofitable.
I mean, some of them have gone sub-zero.
Well, yes, yeah, some of them have gone. Yeah, you're right.
There's a bit of double negative in there, yeah.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, but we sort of built our business case very much on going into the BM and wholesale markets. Now, I firmly believe in the next 12 months, we're going to see that BM case proven out when the market is used more and more efficiently. And we are seeing a big jump from, you know, the start of the year to where we are now. And we're seeing some super attractive days on our assets, which is great. It's just all happened a little bit too late. And, you know, nobody is in control of that process. It is, you know, driven by the control room. And, you know, if you speak to the managers in the control room, they're really, really keen to use more of our batteries, very complimentary on what we're doing. It's just, you know, it takes time for them to be utilized in the most efficient manner. And that will be driven by, you know, consumer interest. You know, the control room has to act A, for energy security, but B, for consumer interest. And on that second point, you know, that is where the work needs to happen. Assets need to be called in merit order. And obviously, you know, we are the lowest form of carbon available as well. So I do believe this revenue environment will improve throughout this year going into next year, but it takes time.
Could I ask you about what it's like to run a fund that takes such a big drawdown, which price reduces so fast? That must have had a huge impact on you as a leader of that fund. And yeah, I just want to know, what's that been like? I can't imagine. I mean, there are things that within your control and things outside your control. And many of these things that affected you were outside of your control and anyone's control. But what's it like to run the business when so much of the business is tied to that share price? So for example, for Modo Energy, we're a private company. There is no share price. Well, there is a share price, but there's no mark to market every day, if you like. And there are funding events every now and again, and everyone says, oh, the number's gone up, that's great. But it's not so much in our psyche about valuation. We don't really care that much about valuation when we're focused on, we just don't have the data on it. So what's it like running a business which is so linked to valuation, performance is linked to valuation, in an environment like this?
So the thing that's linked between the listed business and the private business is the management fee. And we set out to give investors the best deal, basically. We linked our management fee to the share price, not the net asset value. So that has been painful, but it's given investors the best transparency and the best sort of, you know, alignment. In addition to that, you know, we are the second biggest, Harmony Energy Limited is the second biggest shareholder of the investment trust. And management, personally, including me, have significant personal stakes. So we're fully aligned and there's no getting around the pain, the sort of double whammy in pain because you have that personal share in there. But I honestly believe from outset, that's the right thing to do. I wouldn't invest personally in stuff people aren't also invested in. If they come to me with, you know, business idea and say, hey, come and invest, but I haven't put a penny in, I'll be you know, that's my first sort of turn off. So yeah, it has been painful. There's no getting away from it. But the private business, in terms of how we've grown our development pipeline, has given us lots of optionality costs, right? We can do what we like with the overseas entities. We've got lots of stuff happening that's been hugely value accretive to our business outside of the listed trust. So it probably hasn't impacted as much as people may think. It's really just the management fee. But the value in Harmony as a business is much more on the development side. You know, given the progress we've made across the development piece, it's hugely exciting. So whilst it's been very painful to see the share price decline, because the intention was always to try and raise more and more money, you just have to play the cards you're dealt and, you know, play to our strengths and continue to accelerate the development piece, which we've done very well on, and try and, you know, manage the assets as best we can to position them for growth. And, you know, the assets in line with market have continued to perform well. It's just the market has been, there's no getting around with it, it has been weak, but the asset performance has been, and peer group has been encouraging.
And what are your options? So all the funds are trading at a discount, which means all the funds can't raise more money from the public markets until that flips. So what are your options as somebody running the fund to raise more capital to build more assets? I mean, how does that work?
So basically, if you have a fund, and this applies to all sort of green infrastructure funds at the moment, they're all trading at a what we call a discount. And that means the share price is lower than the net asset value. Say, for example, with Harmony, our share price as I speak today is about 51p and our net asset value is 96p. So roughly half. And what that means is, in theory, you could sell shares on the in the private market at 96p, but in the public market, you're only getting 51p. So we have to question what is in the best interest for shareholders. You know, when we know there are transactions happening in the private space at around our NAV or above our NAV, is it in the best of interest of shareholders to continue to hold in this structure? And that's why we've announced last week we were looking to consider an asset sale or several asset sales to really test the market, because we do believe there is a scarcity value to our quality assets with long-term warranties. And sometimes you have to acknowledge sometimes the public market isn't the best place to hold certain assets. And, you know, we know we are continuously approached by private investors looking at what we can do elsewhere. So, you know, France, Germany, Poland, for example, are all hot markets that sit outside the listed vehicle. There's an awful lot of appetite because fundamentally, the story for energy storage is still very, very strong. You know, we're not looking at this on the very short term. We're looking, you know, we are long-term investors and want our investors to be long-term. We're looking at the long-term picture, which is very much a growth market. Yes, there has been a blip this year for the reasons I've mentioned, but we really believe in, you know, a year's time, for example, the balancing mechanism will be operating much more efficiently. We may well have lower global interest rates. In fact, you've seen European Central Bank cut rates marginally at the end of last week. So you're already starting to see that track, and that will push up infrastructure investment pricing if interest rates continue to fall.
It's fascinating what you said about that you guys are considering an asset sale. And it will be really interesting to see what happens when the public markets, say one of those assets sells for much higher than the inferred valuation from the public markets, with doing a bit of kind of napkin maths. It will be interesting to see what happens then, because there's clearly a difference between what private markets value things as and public markets value things as.
Yeah, it will be fascinating. And, you know, we thought this before when we sold a shovel-ready site called Rye Common, which was actually sort of above our NAV, but the market didn't react. So the market is a funny thing. Sometimes it reacts the way you think it will do, and other times it just doesn't react at all, and it's illogical. But yeah, I mean, for sure, you would expect that if we sell an asset for above NAV, you would expect that the shares react accordingly. But I would just caveat that sometimes the market isn't fully rational. But that's, you know, that's essentially why we're doing what we're doing, because we believe it is in shareholders' best interests given the position we're in. Because, you know, unfortunately, raising money on the public markets when you're trading at such a heavy discount is just simply not realistic.
And what you mentioned earlier about having skin in the game, I mean, it's well known that you and Alex and Ben, so the fund managers and CEOs of the three primary energy storage funds, have got lots of skin in the game, personal skin in the game in your funds. And that makes a huge, huge difference. Who else owns Harmony Energy? Who are your other shareholders?
So it's predominantly large institutions. So, you know, I mean, you can have a look at this sort of the share register online without going through it, but there is crossover between all green funds, because a lot of them want to have exposure to this sector in terms of, you know, the wider ESG benefits, but also the correlation returns to other renewable energy classes. So it's a very broad spread, but it's predominantly institutional, not retail, and you therefore get a more educated audience when it's predominantly institutional. And you know, you can be a retail investor in Harmony, but you need to be classified as a sophisticated retail investor.
Let's talk about international now. We've done Great Britain and the current environment. You're obviously very bullish about lots of international markets. Could you just talk through the thinking and the thesis around international markets and how you and the Harmony Energy team are approaching that problem?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's essentially that, you know, we see renewables becoming most cost-efficient form of generation, and I'm talking about particularly solar and onshore wind, in multiple jurisdictions around the globe. And the higher penetration you get, the more requirement you'll need for storage. And it's then just a case of looking at the individual markets and looking at the depth of those markets and the regulations within those markets. And, you know, we are at the moment, we're in France, Poland, Germany, Italy, and New Zealand. And those are all democratic nations. And you've got, you know, a very large market to go out, right? We don't need to be a massive number to make an impact on the market. It's not going to get saturated very, very quickly. And so we look at it, and this is just our personal view, we need at least a runway to 300 megawatts within the next 3 years in each market to justify a position in that market. And we only go in where we know people on the ground. So, you know, in each nation, we've known at least one of the individuals on the initial management teams for a long period of time. And they've all got a great track record, very senior people. We've not, you know, not taken any shortcuts. And it goes back to that thing that really we wanted to be originating sites from green or brownfield, if you like, right the way through to operation, and having that strong management team in country to do that is, you know, we've been very lucky with the individuals we've got. We didn't want to be going in, acquiring sites, and then putting people into territory. We wanted it the other way around so we can develop it steady. Because if you take France, for example, when we went in 2 years ago, people thought we were a bit crazy because there wasn't really a market there. And there wasn't, you know, but we could see it evolving. We could say, okay, well, with a good wind in 2 or 3 years' time, that will be a super interesting market. And it's transpired to be that way. So you do take a little bit of risk, but that's the time to take risk, is in the early development stage rather than later on.
So now I want to ask you about a couple of your biggest suppliers. You famously went hard into a partnership with Tesla early doors and built some 2-hour systems with Tesla, which have, over the last couple of years, have had remarkably high availability, must be said, some of those Tesla assets. But now you're looking beyond Tesla. Could you just talk about that decision and how you think about choosing a supplier for battery assets, especially when you already have experience working with Tesla and the availability has been so high?
Yeah, I mean, to start with, I mean, Tesla have been a great partner, and that sort of partnership goes back to the early days when I first met them in 2016. A lot of people were writing them off back then, but, you know, it had a buzz within the company like no other. And the pushback we were getting from trying to raise funds in London at that time from private investors was, well, we like Tesla technology, but aren't they close to going bust? And obviously they've evolved a lot since then. And, you know, I personally went out to Palo Alto and saw, you know, what was the power pack at the time looked like a bit like a fridge outside the back of the office. And to see the leaps in progression at such speed they've made since then is incredible. So, you know, we always want to have a good partnership with Tesla. The reason we diversified was there comes a point in any business where it makes sense to diversify your supply chain. So we tendered out to, I think it was 8 different battery suppliers on 2 projects within the listed vehicle. And we ended up going with Envision Batteries, who've also been fantastic. And hopefully those 2 battery assets come online soon. The batteries are already on the ground. They look great. But we will always keep the door open for more suppliers to come in. And I think it's healthy to have a batch of suppliers rather than just one. But it was simply for that reason. As you've already mentioned, the availability of the Tesla fleet has been great. The performance has been great. You know, and we've got a really strong relationship with their team as well that we very much enjoy working with. So, you know, we would like to do more with them across the piece and with others. Like I say, we'd like to keep the door open because it also helps create that commercial competitive tension, which you need to, to make sure all suppliers have been cost competitive and we're getting the best deal on the supply chain. And, you know, also from key other things we look at is long-term warranties and also ESG metrics in the supply chain is also very important to us when we are procuring as well.
Well, we can't wait to see the data on the Envision batteries in the ground when those ones will go live. And congrats on that deal. We saw the press release. It was pretty big. The second supplier that I want to talk about is Optimizers. And it's a similar story. Originally, Harmony Energy was 2 feet in with the Tesla Autobidder system. Again, had some excellent performance, to say the least. But now you guys are looking further afield. How do you go about making a decision like that? And how do you choose? Well, you know, what are you looking for from an optimizer?
So, I mean, we're spoiled for choice. We've been honest in the UK. There's some fantastic optimizers out there. And, you know, for reference on those 2 sites where we tendered, 8 suppliers on the battery, I think it was 13 involved in the optimizer tender. And it was for exactly the same reasons. We wanted to diversify and, you know, Tesla Autobidder has been fantastic, but it's simply for that reason we wanted to diversify. Competition was strong. Pricing was very strong. And we wanted to drive some competitive tension in the 2-hour battery space. So, you know, that was really the driver behind it. You know, like you say, you can't really fault Autobidder on performance today. It's been fantastic. And the team have been great, a pleasure to work with. So it's really trying to, you know, squeeze out more competitive tension between the providers. And like I said, you know, we're spoilt for choice. And I hope that competition continues.
How do you go about choosing an optimizer? You're absolutely right. We are the UK is spoilt for choice. There's some fantastic optimizers out there in the market, many of them. And yeah, you guys are serious. You've got serious megawatts to deploy. You've got a pipeline so you're serious about the future as well. How do you go about choosing an optimizer? What are you looking for?
We're looking for someone that's going to be very stable and going to be around for a long time. Although we don't sign hugely long-term contracts because if they underperform, we want to be able to move. We're looking for someone you can build a working relationship with because, you know, our team has regular comms with Tesla Autobidder team, by example, in terms of helping try and shape the overall trading strategy. As you know, Paul was the first guy on the Modo podcast. You know Paul well. His background was sort of writing the algorithm that was ultimately sold to Orsted. So he's much better positioned to talk about this than I am. But, you know, he's able to help shape that strategy and build on that relationship. And it's difficult when you're looking, you know, normally in 5 years' time, I think there'll be much more about, okay, let's look at all the optimizers and see who's performed best on different durations of batteries. At the moment, it's quite difficult to do that because, you know, when we IPO'd, for example, it was all on ancillary services. It was very hard to choose because there were, you know, much shorter duration batteries as well. There was no apart from Hulls Bay, there weren't any other 2-hour batteries in the market at that stage. So as the market evolves, you know, we want to keep flexible and choose the most appropriate optimizer at that point in time and not close the door on anyone. There's been obviously some interesting movements in the market recently, different products coming to market, which again is super interesting for the sector and really gives a vote of confidence for where people see the sort of bottom of the market as well.
Do you have any comments on that? I mean, for listeners, I imagine everyone's already read about this somewhere. If you haven't, go and watch Ed from Modo's video about it. But Gresham House and Octopus just signed a huge deal, which is 0.5 gigawatt roughly of batteries into a tolling agreement with Octopus, where essentially they give them the keys and they get a guaranteed payment. This is a huge development for the industry because it shows, well, it demonstrates maturing sector. You've got two very large bankable parties on each side of a transaction using storage assets like traditional financial instruments, options and swaps, that kind of thing. And it really is a step change in the market for asset owners and also a market for optimizers. Do you have any comments on that deal?
Yeah, I mean, look, personally, I think it's great to see because it kind of puts a bottom in the market, you know, certainly over the next 2 years as to where people really think it's going to go. You know, Octopus wouldn't have signed that deal if they didn't believe it was of good value. And Gresham, you know, likewise, you know, congratulations to both parties. I think, you know, it's been very well received by the market. Great to see that sort of, you know, that innovation coming through. For us, we wouldn't want to sort of tie ourselves in. We think there's more upside to come through, but, you know, definitely different financial structures, it definitely works well and opens up a market. You know, that type of structure will attract more debt into the market, particularly if you're able to lengthen the term on it. And that will mean more batteries being built, which will be better for the consumer, better for the UK energy system. So it's definitely a welcome development and huge congratulations to both parties.
Absolutely. Massive kudos to them. Would have been a lot of work and late nights to get that thing over the line. The last couple of questions, we're going to ask you about your hopes for the future and also if there's anything you'd like to plug or promote. We're going to skip the contrarian view question this time because we discussed you run a public fund. You're very limited on what you're allowed to say. So we're going to skip that one. But the finishing questions are, what are your hopes for the future? And is there anything you want to announce right now?
So hopes for the future, in terms of Harmony, I hope we grow into, you know, I think we're the second biggest battery developer operator in Europe. I hope we can retain and build on that position. I think we've got a really strong foothold, certainly in terms of the credible development pipeline. So super excited about that space and then growing beyond there as well. The vague hopes for the future. In terms of anything I want to plug, nothing really that I want to plug. You know, we are growing. We are interested in, you know, further expansion, but not getting too carried away. And, you know, huge credit to the amazing team we've got to enable us to do what we've done to date. And we're very, very excited about the next 5-10 years because, you know, as you know better than most, Q, that there's huge potential across storage, you know, not only in the UK, but globally. It's a huge, huge market. And we're super excited about what the next 5 years holds for us.
And you talked about sustainable growth there. Of course, there is a limit to how many different continents you can have your face in operationally and working on different time zones at once. And yeah, you've got to take it year by year. It's been amazing to see all the progress that you and the team have made at Harmony Energy since, well, pre and since the IPO. It's been a hell of a emotional journey, I'd imagine, for you and the team. We're excited to see what comes next. We're going to have a close eye on this asset sale, if you do choose to do that. And we'd like to have you back at some point in the next 100 episodes as well. Peter, thanks for coming on the podcast. And it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolute pleasure, Keith. Look forward to episode number 200 in a couple of years' time.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Transmission, a Modo Energy podcast. Transmission delivers conversations from industry leaders and experts exploring energy markets and the operations and technologies related to grid-scale battery energy storage. Check out our other episodes by searching Transmission wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the Energy Academy, our video crash course on how markets in Great Britain and ERCOT work, or head to modoenergy.com to see our written research. Thanks for listening.